everybody. We're back with another commission podcast. This time it was courtesy of Max, who pulled the trigger on the 1995 Hackers movie.
Classic Hackers movie.
Directed by Ian Softley, whose only work that I recognize other than Hackers was it K-Pax. K-Pax, yeah. The Kevin Spacey's an Alien movie.
I like that one too.
Yeah. Starring Johnny Lee Miller, Angelina Jolie, Fisher Stevens, and Lorraine Bracco. All of which, except for Johnny Lee, have gone on to do, or have done more interesting things in the past, or gone on to do interesting things in the future.
Yeah.
Man, this was really a blast from the past. I realize I have never seen this movie in its entirety.
That's amazing.
Back in the day.
Don't know how you escaped it, honestly.
Well, it came out in 95, so I was graduating, so I was still living with my parents. I don't know. I actually don't know why. Probably because I was too cool for school. Like, this is a thoroughly ridiculous depiction of hacker culture, and it probably was offensive to me on that level. Because I remember thinking that a lot. Like, I wasn't down with, like, Revenge of the Nerds and, Weird Science and what was that one with Val Kilmer where he's, like, a mega nerd?
Oh,
They pop popcorn into professors.
Real genius.
Like, yeah. It's like none of that seemed like an authentic depiction of like nerd culture. And since I was a giant fucking nerd, it was offensive to me. So yeah, that's what a fucking pretentious asshole I was back in the day. And then like I remember there's a site called detonate.net that this guy had done these things called bastardizations, where he essentially took in small gifs of frames of movies and put them in sequential order, but rewrote the dialogue to be a commentary on hacker culture or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he did one for like The Matrix, the Blade series starring Wesley Snipes, and Hackers. And I went back and reread his Hackers one for this. Doesn't really hold up.
No?
No. A lot of the late 90s internet humor doesn't really hold up. But yeah, shall we get to Max's comments?
Sure.
Or do we want to talk about what we thought of the movie or our relationship with the movie?
I mean, I've seen this movie countless times, at least 10.
So you agree with Max that this is like, you know, pinnacle of mid-90s filmmaking.
It's a classic hacking movie. I'm 100% serious. Like, this is the quintessential, like, hacking movie when I think of one, even above, yeah, like, The Net or Sneakers, oh, yeah, or any of those. Mm-hmm. Like, I think of Hackers first.
I found the movie like ridiculous, but in a very fun kind, yeah, of way.
Yeah, every character is just a caricature. All of the hacking, with rare exception, is completely preposterous.
Mm-hmm.
There are some like social engineering techniques that I think are pretty good.
Sure. Which is 90% of hacking.
Right, anyway. Right. But other than that, like all the technical stuff, when they show you swirling symbols and characters on a screen,
right,
and you've got like neon acrylic decorated, mm-hmm, mainframe offices and like shit like that, yeah, is just ridiculous. But I love it for that.
Yeah. I was surprised at how much the movie got away with vis-a-vis, like, I think there was one, maybe two F-bombs, and what was at the time 19-year-old Angelina Jolie's breasts.
A couple of times.
Yeah, front and center. In a PG-13 movie.
You get a shot of Matthew Lillard's ass as well as,
yep,
Joey, whoever that actor is.
Yep, butt of Fuko.
Sure, yeah. But
No.
The emphasis on butt.
Butt and Fuko. So let's get to Max's commentary and then we'll take it from there.
Okay.
Max says, I would love it if you guys review one of my high school favorites, Hackers. The movie came out when I was a senior in high school, 1995. Hey, class of 95 represent. And I remember it as a beautiful cross between a cool skateboarding video game, playing trance music, listening computer subculture film, and a terribly awkward attempt to portray cutting edge computer technology to an audience mostly familiar with basic word processing. Seems like the one where math symbols and equations wondrously float on the screen as a way of depicting the magic of computer science are classic. Besides the film itself, I remember the soundtrack being amazing, purchased by me on both cassette and CD.
Yes.
I've
listened to the soundtrack while programming I don't know how many times.
Because it's heavy on like Prodigy and...
Yeah, like electronica, mid-90s electronica.
Was it too early for Moby?
No.
Moby on there?
I don't think it was too early for him. Maybe slightly.
Yeah. But yeah, a lot of that like electronica, trance, dance kind of stuff.
Stuff that's good in the background.
Yeah.
When you're doing other things that are important.
And I found the cast a strange mix. Johnny Lee Miller right before Trainspotting, Angelina Jolie right before pretty much everything, Matthew Lillard, Mark Antony, Penn Jillette, Wendell Pierce, Bunk from The Wire, Michael Gaston, etc. I watched it again recently and struck by two themes which prompted the commission. First, as computer guys, I was curious what you thought of the actual hacking, particularly given the technology and capabilities at the time. Scenes like Johnny Lee fighting someone for control of the local TV station's movie mechanical arm seem laughable, but some of the other stuff, like getting free long-distance phone calls, was actually real. I remember some guys in my high school had something called the Anarchist Cookbook, which explained all kinds of things about hacking, how to make free calls on payphones, freaking, how to trick cash change machines into giving you extra money. In any case, it did seem like the movie tried to walk a fine line between being computer fantasy for the masses, but also throwing a bone to some of the computer experts at the time who actually might know the difference. Okay, let's take this first topic first. How does this movie hold up both at the time it was made and now in like almost 30 years retrospect? How does the movie hold up in terms of its depiction of hacking?
I actually don't. It's like half bad and half good.
Right.
Like I can tell that somebody was behind the scenes saying this is how it should look. Because you have a lot of like when we were watching it, you noted, hey, these viruses actually kind of look like on the user's end what a virus might look like.
Right.
Cookie monster going across the screen or
right.
Like they'll do weird, stupid shit to your computer.
Right.
But then you look at like the plague in his neon acrylic fantasy world.
Right.
Pushing buttons on a desktop keyboard that can't possibly do anything.
No, it looks like he's Kanye West mixing his latest beat.
Right. Like, yeah.
You know.
It's completely absurd.
Yeah.
But it's a weird blend, like 50-50, I'd say.
Yeah, I feel like that the core character of Zero Cool was largely built around the reputation that Kevin Mitnick had at the time.
Yeah.
Because it's almost word like the same, like he got caught, he got essentially forbidden to use a computer or a payphone because they thought he could bring down the nuclear grid with like a by whistling into a handset. Like,
yeah,
there was a lot of sensationalized tales about poor Kevin. And I felt like a lot of the core movie was taken from that. And a lot of that, it's kind of reminds me a lot of like The Wire, where that was a very real depiction of things, but it was kind of anachronistic because the bust that actually happened in Baltimore around the pagers and payphones happened 10, 15 years in the past. Everyone else had moved on to burners and cell phones. And so it's like, yes, it's very realistic, but it's like you're talking about stuff that was like more Matthew Broderick's War Games level of freaking where you're doing war dialing and auto dialing and trying to scam long distance stuff. That stuff was pretty realistic, but very dated. The actual hacking of computer systems and stuff was just fucking fantasy. I mean, all that. And what I thought was interesting is how much the fears we had back in 95 about where hacking would go and like was so dismissed by like people that were generally into hacking culture have now been weaponized and are in fact used. Like Stuxnet, which is this huge worm that did billions of dollars of damage, was what everyone thinks a joint American-Israeli operation to destroy centrifuge machines in Iran.
Yeah.
And that was kind of like the first shot in the digital war. And now we've heard reports of like Russians penetrating like electrical grid networks and have compromised personal information and banking information and information of private individuals and politicians. Like the cyber war, you know, begun these cyber wars have, and it's not a bunch of teenagers having fun and poking the eye of the man. It's all the men in the world poking their own eyes and, you know, fingering each other's buttholes, and it's not as fun and whimsical.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing that the hackers of the age missed in their analysis.
Right.
Is just that not everyone is altruistic as them or as good-natured as them.
Or
you know,
that
they're not curious people trying to explore and learn like the hackers all saw themselves.
Yes.
They're malicious people trying to take down governments. Like,
yes.
that's the difference here. You just don't see it from that side because that's not your perspective.
Yeah, or amoral corporations and governments that are attacking each other. Like this, like if you go back and read like the Hacker's Manifesto or any of this stuff, like this like it's so full of how self-important. Like these people thought because they could do these things on networks and take advantage of these that they were like gods, like they were above the law, they were above. Like, you know, national concerns and concerns of race and culture. And that all seems so fucking naive now. Like that, like you were wizards of this arcane technology and maybe one a generation would be born instead of like the fact that there's thousands and thousands of people in China and Russia and the Department of Defense and the CIA and NSA that are all wearing white shirts and black ties and doing this on the reg with no passion and no love.
Yeah.
That's the thing that I don't think this movie saw coming.
No, they were trying to build a movement that just wasn't realistic.
Yeah, it's so weird. But it's like I can't think of many parallels. Like the FBI didn't stop John Dillinger robbing banks and then go on to rob banks themselves 30 years later, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, it's such a weird thing where this is cybercrime and hackers and yet this is, you know, is also the next, I guess, frontier of warfare. It's a really, really weird thing. Did we talk about the social engineering aspect of it?
That's the most accurate part of this movie.
Right.
And the thing that still works the best today.
Yeah, it's like 90% of hacking, like it's really hard to hack past systems, especially well-designed systems. And as mature as this technology, most large systems are very well defended. It's very easy to call up Alice or Bob in accounting and say you forgot your password and could you do this or that, the other, and just rely on people wanting to be nice and avoid conflict and get along to go along. Mm-hmm. Like, you know... It sucks. The other thing I thought was really realistic is I've been in an office in two different companies twice where a computer virus swept through the entire facility. Mm-hmm. And the depiction of like everyone sitting at their desks and like the screens doing something weird and everybody getting on the phone, like that is so fucking realistic. But what actually happens in a large installation and the panic and pandemonium when you lose control of your computer network.
Yeah.
That was very realistic. Mm-hmm. The actual hacking, though, like you said,
the hacker battles that they have are especially ridiculous, right? Like that TV station thing that Max is talking about,
right,
is completely preposterous in its depiction. Like, I believe that a couple hackers might hack, might have a hack battle over this TV station, but it would all be done on the command line, and it would all be like getting access to users that have been created for the other hackers' access and deleting those and like shit like that. It wouldn't be, well, he took the tape out of my robot's hand. I guess I got to get it back.
Yeah, yeah. It wouldn't be a mechanical struggle between these two machines. No, I thought that was pretty funny. Although there is a kernel of truth to that, because a lot of the early really freaking and hacking was people fucking with satellite dishes and satellite up feeds. Mm-hmm. Like there's a classic example of the early 80s where some dude, which is still unknown, took over HBO for like 15 minutes and did this demented Max Headroom cosplay. You can look it up and see it on YouTube, but it's like, you know,
that's amazing.
Yeah, no, it's like fun stuff like that. And I remember when this movie came out, the rage was to take someone's website homepage and fucking deface it and say, like, you were Jew were ownzored by.
Yeah,
it's like all this leet speak. That was also fairly realistic depiction of hacker culture. Uh-huh. But as a person who was around that environment in 1995, like, I think they made it seem cooler because they mashed up like goth and punk and skateboard and, like, you know, they mixed up all these different things into the hacker culture.
Yeah.
And it was also very, like, you know, diverse as far as gender and, like, racial makeup, which didn't seem very, very true to life to me either. Yeah.
Yeah, it's tough to know. I wasn't in the, you know, the major hacking scenes.
Right.
Like, I'm sure New York had a vibrant hacking community.
Right.
'Cause that's where... I don't know. Some of the central figures were based out of there, a lot of them in California, places like that. But yeah, The most ridiculous scene in the whole movie is probably the final Hack the Gibson scene.
Yeah.
You know, with my help, we could do it in 3 minutes.
Uh-huh.
Not three, but yeah, the plague just doing his thing, and Pin and the goons, I don't know, the squad of jumpsuited freaks, right, that they've got in there.
Right.
That whole scene is ridiculous. The system overlay where things are going red versus green, and he somehow gets information from that.
Right.
About what he needs to do and press on this giant desk-sized keyboard.
Yeah, and we're like, Crash Override is like, bring all your best viruses to, you know, essentially
Grand
the New
Central
York
Station.
Yeah, Grand Central Station will find payphones and bring it down. Like, it's...
Yeah.
That's not how any of that stuff works.
But it is kind of fun to watch, I gotta say.
I always wonder, like, why did Hollywood people think that random physics equations rotating like a shitty Windows 95 desktop over people's heads rotating 360 degrees was more interesting than just watching people, like, bash on a kernel or just type random shit into a terminal? That's what, like, Mr. Robot does, right?
Yes.
Like, you know, just watching people do exploits, you don't even have to understand what it is, but like, or like the Matrix got right, where Neo's sitting at this monochrome terminal and doing, like, that's where serious hacking
happens.
Like,
I almost believe that you could get good enough at reading binary that as it scrolls down the screen like that, you could tell what was happening. Like some kind of semi-visual readout.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, that's the interesting thing about Mr. Robot is the thing they do so well, in my opinion, is while they're hacking and while they're doing the actual commands that hackers would actually believe, they're also narrating and saying what they're doing.
Right.
You know? And hackers doesn't really do much of that.
No, they're just hacking. Like, when they're hacking, they're at a computer and their hands are flying at super speed and there's, like, classical Newtonian force equations, like, rotating in the background and... There's animated GIF skull and crossbones, but yeah.
It does a little bit of it through some of the characters that aren't hackers, like Tony Soprano's counselor, therapist.
Yeah.
She's constantly asking questions. Pin is kind of saying, hey, they just got into the kernel or whatever.
Right. Don't know what that is, they're attacking the kernel. It's panicking.
But it's for the most part, it's pretty ridiculous.
His second question he wanted to ask, which is related, this might be one of the first in a very long line of movies about hacking, and I thought it was interesting to see how they handled it as both a serious crime, while at the same time making sure you knew that the good guys were the hackers and not the bumbling FBI. And most of they did was just elaborate pranks anyway. And the last 21, man, that montage of Bunk from the Wire...
Yeah.
We'll talk about that here in a minute.
So good.
Because by my count, he was fucked with 120 times in like the space of 24 hours. What must his day have been like?
Yep.
In the past 21 years, given exponential use and awareness of the internet, the escalation of identity theft, online voyeurism, and social media trolling, WikiLeaks, with having national election manipulations potential, it seems like attitudes on hacking have changed. If the hacker stereotype was grossly overplayed in the movie, what is it now? I mean, that's...
I don't know if they've changed. They've broadened.
Yeah, because, like, I feel like that in a lot of this... In 2016 is where it started to pivot, because, like Trump himself was talking about, 300-pound people in their mom's basement doing all this stuff. And now it seems like 2 years from it, it's the consensus is no, these are actually large professional cyber warfare firms, like sanctioned by legitimate governments, our own and our adversaries that are doing this on a large scale. And it's not like a bunch of dudes in sweatpants and 3XL t-shirts swilling Mountain Dew. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not the Matthew Lillards of the world.
No, I think the war has always been over the term hacker.
Like,
the white hat hackers, the exploratory
hacker
kind,
versus cracker.
Yeah, they wanted the word hacker to be their own, and they didn't want it taken away from them by the FBI and the law enforcement that were hunting down people who were actual criminals.
Right.
They didn't want the term hacker to become synonymous with criminal, which it kind of has.
Mm-hmm.
That definition, and I wouldn't say it's even changed in that way. I would say it's kind of stayed the same.
Well, it's like Banksy's a criminal.
Right.
But he's not like, you know, rob a bank criminal.
No.
And like hackers were always criminal in the sense that they're tagging graffiti, they're clogging a public bathroom. I'm like stuff that like is essentially property damage or things that are embarrassing or humiliating to their targets, but no actual financial harm done to now massive financial harm done.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you know, one of the attacks going around a couple of years ago was where you'd get this virus and it would essentially encrypt your hard drive, called ransomware, and you'd have to pay to decrypt it anywhere from $50 to $1,000. And there's a lot of people made a lot of money, a lot of money. So before viruses would just kind of fuck up your shit, now these viruses and worms and Trojans can like steal your banking credentials and clean out your checkbook. Like the scale is no longer like, oh, someone spray painted, you know, a police officer with mace butterflies coming out of his gun. It's now like someone destroyed the bank, you know, someone blew up a bank. And it's which is sad because I feel like, right after the year 2000, like, I think the hacker war had been won and the public consciousness was like, okay, hackers aren't that bad.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not something to be hysterical about. And now I just think that's, you know, that war got resurrected and swiftly lost.
Yeah.
Like, no one I don't think would go and be like, self-identify as a hacker out in public.
Huh.
Outside of like,
I don't know. I think, there are communities like...
Well, I was going to say, like, the security conference in Vegas. What the fuck is... Why am I blanking on Black Mesa? No,
Black Mesa.
That's what it is. No, Black Mesa.
Yeah. Shit. DEFCON.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like the DEFCON stuff. Like, yeah, you'd find people, and that's like, you go to DEFCON, and you better be on your fucking toes because
you better not connect to the wireless network.
The public speakers are going to be trying to fuck with your cell phone.
Yeah.
Let alone
put your phone
skulking
into airplane mode.
Yeah.
Or maybe just take the battery out.
Yeah.
Leave in your hotel room.
Yeah, and it's also funny because I remember like, a lot of the battles back in the day were like, well, if you're stupid enough not to be running a firewall and doing all this, well, then you deserve to be like whatever happened to you. Nowadays, it's really impossible. Like, you know, the old adage of the only secure network is one that's unplugged is more true than ever. But it's like, you know, companies are getting hacked all the time, and it's not always about just gross negligence. Sometimes it's just like there's really nothing you can do to keep someone out of a system that they wanted badly enough.
Yeah,
because ultimately the weak point is always their fucking human frailty. I mean, maybe super advanced AI can keep this shit safe forever and not terminate us, but still waiting for that day to come. Anything else you want to say on that topic, or do you want us to like go into freeform?
No, let's just talk about the movie now.
Okay. One thing I noticed, like, in the Changing the Times is how, like, a SWAT is depicted in this movie, whereas it's essentially cops wearing recognizably police uniforms, like, with ball caps. I didn't even see, like, tactical
armor.
Vests. And they have, you know, like some sort of semi-automatic rifle. And they're like using a, you know, a door ram, like a manual door ram, versus like now where you really can't, like, when SWAT are depicted in media and in real life, it's essentially they look like paramilitary, like Delta Force or Navy SEALs smashing a place.
Yeah.
They come in with the grenades going and it's like this overwhelming show of force. Like, it's amazing in less than 30 years how you view like civilian police under SWAT teams versus how they're viewed like now. Like, almost every metro police department looks like the SWAT team from 30 years ago. And the SWAT guys look like fucking special forces operators.
Right.
So that was kind of interesting and breathtaking for me.
Yeah, you're talking about the intro where they bust in
to Zero Cool.
Zero Cool's house. I never really liked the style of that intro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like
the low frame rate, slow mo doesn't do it for me. It feels choppy in a bad way. I know they're going for something stylistic, and I don't even know if they had the footage to do it. Like, did they? They must have shot this on film.
Mm-hmm.
Surely they shot it. Well, maybe they didn't have a high enough frame rate. to really make this slow-mo look good, but it's bad the way it is.
They like made the decision in editing rather than like, hey, we're actually going to shoot this in slow-mo. Yeah. But it could be also, because there's a lot of like what I would call weird experimental techniques in here.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's supposed to be like high-tech, in-your-face, and disruptive and
yeah,
cool.
Like all the intercut movie clips that they do.
Yeah, showing
people's emotions and what they're thinking.
Yeah.
I think it's actually pretty cool stylistically.
Yeah.
So,
but maybe that first one is
one
like
thing,
that was
an
intentional choice to go with like that jittery kind of feel, and it, you know, it just didn't work, or it doesn't work today.
We talked a little bit about how many famous actors are in this, or soon to be famous, I suppose.
Right.
The list is extensive. Like I couldn't believe seeing all the faces, even though I've seen this movie so many times. Just the sheer number, like. Everybody from the 90s I can think of was in this movie. Angelina Jolie obviously is the most famous person now to come from this movie. I would say probably probably Wendell Pierce is the second most famous. He's been in a lot of high profile HBO stuff.
Sure.
And I don't know who, I mean, Stephen Fisher,
I think it's Stephen Fisher.
Yeah. He's been in a lot of stuff that I like.
No, Fisher Stevens.
Fisher Stevens, sorry. He's got one of those names that's easy to mix up.
Yeah, so this is literally the first time I've been aware that I was watching the Indian guy from Short Circuit.
Yeah.
Like this, like I've heard the story. Like the first time I heard is Kumail Nanjiani talking about this guy doing a full-on Apu from The Simpsons as a white guy, just like a full-on brown face. And that was only 10 years before this movie's made. And seeing him out, it's like, it's really jarring. It's really jarring that someone thought that that was going to be cool.
Yeah.
Like, let's just get this white guy, get some shoe polish out, have him do an outrageous stereotypical Indian guy accent, and we'll make two very successful movies about robots about it. And it's also funny because, like, we made this joke at the end of the movie where he's, like, dressed up as this old man to try to, like, wouldn't it be hilarious if he, like, just pulls out... You know, whatever the fuck his name.
His old Short Circuit costume,
Yeah, Ganesh or whatever his name was in Short Circuit. Like, it'd be, you know, it's like, oh, this is not, you know, I'm not even going to try to do the accent because don't need that in my life.
But more recently, I've seen him in Always Sunny. He's the bar reviewer that gives him a bad review.
Oh,
and
shit, really?
They tie him up, yeah.
Okay,
they
okay.
Take him hostage.
Okay, so I guess I have seen him and not even realized it.
Yeah.
Huh, interesting. I wonder what else he's been in that I would never recognize him in. Because that's the thing. Oh. If your first breakout role is playing an Indian guy that's, like, virtually unrecognizable out of makeup, then, like, did you really have a breakout role?
I don't know.
It's like, you know, Bobcat Goldthwait, the actor, like, what he is in real life is nothing like his Bobcat or his Wildcat or whatever fucking Police Academy character, but he like was forced to be that for many, many years in public until he got into producing and directing. I don't know. I wonder, like, I wonder if there's any interviews where people ask this Fisher's guy, like, what he thought about Short Circuit and what he thinks about it now. And, like, you know, I don't, I like, times have definitely changed. I'm not saying he's a bad guy. It's just really fucking surreal.
Yeah.
So, and I imagine if you were an Indian American at the time, it must have been even more so. Anyway,
my I want to talk about my favorite character here in a second, but two other people that I wanted to talk about, Michael Gaston, who we know better as Dog Shooter from The Leftovers.
Yeah.
He's in this as one of the FBI agents. And then his partner is Mark Anthony, the singer, the pop musician, Latino. And he's a weird character in this movie because he kind of sympathizes with the hackers. Like, he desperately wants to be a hacker. Like, he's attending these house parties, and this whole plot goes nowhere. I wonder if there was something that was cut from the movie or the script, but he, like, shows up randomly at a house party where the hackers are, and you think, oh, shit, they're going to get the drop on these hackers because there's Mark Anthony pretending to be one.
Right.
But it doesn't go anywhere.
No. No, it doesn't.
It's weird.
Where was Mark Anthony's musical career? Like, that's before he actually had one, wasn't it?
Maybe.
I feel like when he got with J-Lo, that was in the early 2000s, and that was kind of his peak. Yeah, all that shit's a blur. Remember. That's all shit's a blur for me.
Yeah. Here's what's new in premium content for our club members.
Executive producers have a chance to exercise their rights under the Patreon pact we've made by voting for the next pulp movie that Jim and I will be covering. If you're one of the elite few backers at the executive producer level, don't miss your chance to influence us. Hurry over to patreon.com/baldmove and vote in the latest movie poll before it closes on Wednesday morning.
And for all other club members, we've got an all-new episode of Lunch with Jim and Aaron this Friday afternoon. Catch the live stream at 1 p.m. to interact with us and your fellow munchers over on Patreon, or you can wait for the podcast to drop later that day.
If you want even more Bald Move in your life, head over to support.baldmove.com to find out how you can get tons of bonus audio and video content, plus ad-free feeds. You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today. You know, I also thought... There was a couple other things I thought were pretty accurate, like the frustrations of being an IT worker, where, like, essentially back before you know this guy is like the arch villain of the film, this the plague guy comes in his boardroom and says, hey, this happened to one of our boats and here's this thing and it's developed. And like none of these executives even fucking knew there was a problem. This guy is telling him the problem, the plan, and then they're instantly up his ass wanting to know when it's going to be fixed, if it's going to be fixed tomorrow. And it's like, what the fuck? It's like, you know, if you tell someone, hey, I think these equations say it's possible to split the atom, and then they're like, well, why isn't it split tomorrow, nerd? Like the idea that you're being managed by people that have no fucking clue your job. And if you weren't doing your job, how fucked they would be. But yeah, how like weirdly armchair quarterback it all is.
Yeah.
That's very, I mean, I'm sure it's gotten better now. IT is so, you know, IT has gone from being like the redhead stepchild of accounting to being like its own like co-equal branch in most companies, especially. Yeah. And sometimes they are the department wearing the pants in like IT, you know, sure. Tech companies. I'm sure it's gotten better, but boy, God, that really gave me a lot of flashbacks when I was just seeing him and like interacting with the board. I mean, I don't know. Would it kill the guy to wear a suit and get a haircut and like maybe fit in with the culture a little bit more? Probably not. But then he wouldn't be able to be, I'm the plague. But
Mr. the Plague.
Yeah.
You know, he could have probably avoided all the jail time and all the hassle if he just emptied his recycle bin.
Yeah.
Like, it's a garbage file that they find, right? A junk file.
But that's how
he could have just zeroed out the free space on the hard drive. And,
yeah, if
you're running a worm
that's
going to steal $25 million from this company, you'd think you'd take some precautions.
But wasn't that the reason it was in the garbage? Because that was the vector that he was using to infect it. Like, I thought that was essentially
running from the garbage?
He's hiding the payload in this garbage thing that, you know, people wouldn't normally, like a hacker wouldn't come
okay.
into.
Maybe so.
Because I had some questions. I tried to keep score of like how plausible the actual plot is. Because essentially, the scheme is Superman 3. you're going to write something that just nibbles a sense.
Okay, Office Space, yeah.
It was just the same thing as saying it's Office Space. Uh-huh. You're going to have this thing that just nibbles a little bit, and hopefully Michael Bolton doesn't fuck up the scaling and it takes a dollar instead of a penny, because then you're going to be fucked. Yeah. But
well, I don't really want to call it genius because it seems obvious. The thing here was he wasn't actually removing it from the company's account.
Well,
every single day he was shifting it to another account.
Yeah.
That would then accumulate up to $25 million, and then he would dump it to his own account.
Yeah,
so
and then the other thing that's kind of smart about being in a garbage file is that his whole plan was to then do a large act of actual cyber terrorism, like sinking these boats that would cause an ecological disaster that would then be pinned on some hackers that he was going to frame.
Right.
So like there's like, you know, as far as plots go, it's like not the worst part of this stupid movie.
Oh, easily.
Let me ask you this. Why is VR technology exactly the same as it was 30 years ago? Like, I was shocked.
It's the best we can do.
I was shocked when they see this guy getting this VR rig, and it looks exactly like a modern-day Oculus Rift with the exact same controllers and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how in the fuck has things not gotten a little closer to Ready Player One?
I mean, we had VR
like,
right in the
80s. Like, we're closer to the future as depicted timeline-wise to Ready Player One than we are to 1995.
Uh-huh.
How is VR technology still these big, goofy fucking visor helmets with ridiculous-looking Falcon F-15 things that you're holding in your hands?
I don't know, man.
Why isn't it better?
That's the best VR experience we could possibly hope to have.
I guess so. Which, you know, maybe I don't want it.
Is the boat automation ahead of its time? I don't really know, because he says that like all of the boats are on autopilot, GPS navigation. There are no people controlling them whatsoever.
No, that's bullshit.
It's got to be ahead of the time.
Yeah, that's,
like I would believe that now, maybe.
Right, right.
But not then.
And also, like the thing is, I think the idea was they weren't controlling the navigation. It was much lower level, like the boat's ability to, because this is like, I don't know if oil tankers have, but cruise ships have the ability to on the fly adjust their ballast and like with thrusters to maintain a certain attitude in the water. Mm-hmm. So the captain's at the wheel, but does the captain have the ability to turn that shit off and, you know, go with manual control of the ballasting and self-righting systems? I don't know. And that's always like the more elegant hack is it's not like you see in the movies where people like take control and have the tankers meet in the middle of the Bering Strait and ram each other. It's always like I noticed that about like Mr. Robot and like, you know, we've both read Artemis, the follow up to The Martian about the moon, and like the hacks are always elegant, like bypasses of tertiary systems that like you're not taking over the steering wheel, you're stopping a fan that will allow a battery bank to overheat, that will short out a circuit board, that will then make the thing inoperative. It's never as spectacular, as awesome as it looks in the movies.
Right.
But it's still effective.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess, you know, the idea that hackers would just make oil tankers sit in the water for 2 days and how many millions of dollars that would cost the companies involved, that's not as exciting as like fucking flipping them over and having them leak all over the place.
Sure.
Oh man, can we talk about the Hack the Planet TV show?
Hack the Planet! You mean the YouTube series, if it was made in 2018?
Yeah.
These guys totally would be on YouTube. Razor
I guess it
Blade.
Would, but they wouldn't look like, I mean,
They might look like that.
Well, the idea is that there is this pirate TV signal that you tune in at a certain point of the day, and then these guys who are dressed up like geisha girls do these, like, 20-year-old phone freaking hacks for like 5 minutes, and then that's your, you know, that's your daily dose of Hack the Planet.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you're right. It would make more sense as a YouTube series.
Nowadays, yeah.
Yeah. But they wouldn't be caught dead in makeup and geisha girl outfits, and it'd be very hyper masculine. Mm-hmm. There'd be skulls and like all kinds of stuff involved. I don't know.
Uh-huh.
But I thought that was like one of the most like kind of ridiculous, or the fact that they would hide out in this lair that looks like one of the fucking neon gangs from a who ran Batman into the ground? Was it Bruckheimer?
Sure.
No, it wasn't that. Sounds that. Right. It's whoever. You know the guy to put nipples on Batman. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, they hide in these, like, super neon black-lit rave caves when they're not hacking. Like, that's all ridiculous.
Yeah, it is. I feel like everybody's name in this is pretty ridiculous, too. We talked about Zero Cool. You just mentioned Razor and Blade.
Yeah.
As two of the hackers.
Serial killer.
Serial killer is Matthew Lillard and
Acid Burn.
Acid Burn. And then they do this mashup of Crash and Burn, which I thought was pretty funny.
Right, right.
You got Nikon, Lord Nikon, who is got the guy with the photographic memory.
Yeah.
Joey, who doesn't have a fucking handle. He's just Joey.
He's trying. He's trying to get one throughout the movie.
Dr. Doom. No, he's not trying hard enough.
No, no. I don't know, because that's the thing. Like, I saw back, I never really gotten at obviously hacking, but I was around like the pirate scene back in the late 80s, early 90s. And you could have as a ridiculous name as you wanted, as long as you delivered a 0 day wares, that was like, it's like the name wasn't as cool as the rep. So, like, I don't know, like one of the biggest hackers in the local scene is this guy named Unca Scrooge. That's like a ridiculous DuckTales reference. But, you know, guy delivered the goods. Guy could fucking crack the copy protection on a piece of software, lickety split.
And one of the reasons why I say I think there was someone behind the scenes who knew a thing or two about hacking for real.
Yeah.
Is because they serial killer at some point makes it clear, or at least I think he's telling the truth, that his name is Emmanuel Goldstein.
Oh, right.
Which, you know, he references 1984 in the movie, which, if you're not familiar, that's a character from 1984. But it's also one of the, I guess, the alias of the guy who started 2600 Hacker Magazine.
Yeah.
So that's like a pretty deep cut from an early time in hacking.
Yeah. And it was also like the Gibson supercomputer was named after William Gibson, who invented the term cyberspace. I think, isn't he the one who wrote Snow Crash or Cybermancer? What was it?
Nomicon. Cryptonomicon?
Neuro. I thought it was Neuromancer or something like that.
I can't remember. One of them is Neil Stevenson, I think.
Neuromancer, yeah.
Neuromancer.
He wrote Neuromancer. Okay. I don't know who wrote Snow Crash. But yeah, there's a lot of like homages to hacker culture in this movie.
Yeah.
Which is funny. Oh, Neil Stevenson is the one who wrote Snow Crash. Which is funny because, like, my recollection is hacker culture broadly thought this, like this is be like if the Adam West Batman came out to honor the hardcore fans of The Dark Knight.
Uh-huh.
Like, it's largely seen as this ridiculous lampooning of their culture that no true Scotsman hacker would ever would think is cool or had something going on. And there's also just like a lot of like weird, like the Plague, who is like a 40-year-old man. Marty McFly's the hero with a floppy disk where he literally has a guy and a caddy pull him up with the skateboard and he slaps the disk out of his hand and rides off in the night. Yeah. Like, who thought that was going to be cool?
I don't know.
Who thought the fake Indian guy from Short Circuit could like pull off a Marty McFly seat? I don't get it. The other thing that really confused the shit out of me throughout the movie is the dream sequences.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you'd be in deep to like, you know, Angelina Jolie and this, you know, crash override getting down, and then like FBI agents would be involved, and there's a crazy stuff, or, you know, crash override be wearing weird women's lingerie, and then like it turned out, oh, that's Angelina Jolie's dream. And then that happened several times where I thought, like, why are they keeping going back to this exact same well through all these different characters?
It is a little weird, but I especially love their reactions both times because they're disturbed by them.
Yeah.
And they think they're nightmares, but then they think again, and maybe that was a good dream.
Right.
I don't know.
And then who'd you say, the Lord Nikon?
Uh-huh.
So he knows he's busted at one point.
Oh, no, this is a guy from Con Air whose name I don't know in the movie.
So he knows he's going to be busted by the FBI, and he goes home, and there's a show of him frantically going through all of his hacker books and, like, ripping pages out and getting rid of it.
Uh-huh.
And then he goes to sleep, and he gets raided by the FBI, and I'm like, why the, like,
he knew this was going to happen. Like, this fucking thing should be squeaky clean.
Yeah.
And then he wakes up and it's a nightmare. I'm like, oh, okay, well, that makes sense. But then the FBI raid him and suddenly he's in, like, why did you just show me a scene of him going home and cleaning everything? Like, it'd be like if Mr. Robot went home and did a full down, like, one of his, like, full purges.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where like, he burns and then, up the processor. Then the, yeah, and then the and then smash it with a hammer. And then the cops come and it's like, okay, well, what are you going to find? I got some broken microchips in my garbage and I probably took them down five blocks away to a different dumpster. Like, mm-hmm. what the fuck?
But he must have done that because he is with them during the hack at Grand Central Station.
So they picked him up, but they didn't find anything.
Yeah, he must have done the all clean right. wipe. And he also dreamed it. And it, you're right, though. It's a very weird mix of realities.
Yeah. Can I ask you what Crash Override had strapped to his head in the final hacking sequence? He looks like he had a 1995 prototype of the Google Glass.
Oh, yeah?
I'm not even sure Google was invented at that time. I think we were still making do with Alta Vista and Yahoo. Mm-hmm. But, like, somehow Google time traveled 3 years into the past, invented Google Glass, a shitty 1995 version of it, strapped to this poor kid's head. What the hell is that? It looks like a high-tech, steampunk, douchebag monocle?
I mean, you could say that of literally anything that serial killer is wearing in this entire movie.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck
serial
is wrong with you?
Serial killer's trying very hard.
He is. He's my favorite character because of it. Mm. He makes almost no sense when he speaks, but he's so entertaining to watch.
Hmm. Hmm. Yeah, I don't know.
Like,
about
this and SLC Punk put Matthew Lillard on the map for me.
Right. I mean, to me, Matthew Lillard
made
is,
him an icon, honestly.
Matthew Lillard is my Chris Tucker.
Okay.
Like,
I see
just,
that.
He's nails on a chalkboard in every movie I've ever seen him in. So, I don't know. He was, like, okay in SLC Punk, and I quite liked his alcoholic, neurotic journalist routine in The Bridge before The Bridge, like, fell off the cliff. But, yeah, no, the young Matthew Lillard was a lot for me to take. The other thing that I found confusing, and I want to know if you had insight since you've seen this movie, you know, 1,507 times, why does Crash Override have scratches on his neck? Like, he's got prominent human fingernail scratches, but if he got them in the commission of something, I did not see it.
Yeah, I really don't know. I was confused by that, too.
I also thought it was funny that, like, when Angelina Jolie played the prank about sending him to the pool on the roof or whatever, that, like, there's, like, you know, 30 nerds up there that had all been played the prank on them, and they all know that the door swings shut behind them, and yet they're all, like, 50 yards away, crowding the rail of the building, and no one's sitting by the door to catch it when someone comes up there.
Right.
Like, 30 times this has happened, you fucking nerds, and none of you have had the presence of mind to post a person there to catch the door. Like, you're just going to rely on, don't let the door shut as the guy's walking towards you. Like, come on. Come on, nerds. This is why you get the pink bellies and the purple nurples. Don't want to victim blame, but come on. Come on.
What about the acting from the lead? From Johnny Lee Miller.
It's not good.
No, I agree.
Not good.
It's pretty bad, actually. In fact, I think everybody else is good.
They're okay.
Johnny Lee Miller is not charismatic in this movie at all.
Mm-hmm.
And the way he delivers lines, just, I was shocked that they made it to the film.
Yeah, I remember a couple times where we were just talking about the exact line reading he gave was like, why would you not? Why is that the best take? It had to be the only take.
It had to be.
Because if you had some of these things where, you know, he just, like, kind of slurred his words or just, like he was literally reading off the paper for the first time, like the emotion he was putting into is wildly off base. But I thought most people on this were just okay. Like, even Wendell Pierce, like, I really like him. And he does a lot, but he's just got this broad, hammy performance. Angelina Jolie was, like, dressed ridiculously and made up ridiculously, but, like, Angelina Jolie is super fucking hot and plays that, like, you know, weird girl so well that, like, she's kind of a Harrison Ford of her type where she doesn't need to work with a lot to get the point across, but, like, she wasn't doing anything that I would say was super interesting or special.
Hmm. I thought everyone was
only
exactly
19
what they needed
in the
to
movie
be.
Well, fair point.
Like that's the point of this movie is not to showcase amazing acting.
Yeah.
It's to create characters that you enjoy watching, I guess.
The thing is like
they did that.
I feel like this movie could have been a hell of a lot better. Like, have you seen Matthew Broderick's War Games lately?
Not lately, no.
I've seen it like 8 years ago, and I remember thinking like, wow, this holds up a lot better than I thought, and this is like a serious movie that's contemplating serious things. At no time did I think that about Hackers, but it's so close. Like, if they had a slightly less ridiculous depiction of hacking, and they didn't try to make hacking try to be like David Bowie cool...
Mm-hmm.
And they gave, like, maybe the villains were a little bit more fleshed out. Like, it's a, you know, a really tense kind of, like, standoff between these hackers and the FBI and this greedy multinational company and the amoral.
Yeah, but I feel like that's not what this movie is trying to be.
But why?
Like, this movie could be that if they changed everything about it, but this is the Fast and Furious of hacking. This is not, like, antitrust, right?
Well,
like,
see, I think it fails at that because it's not over. Like, that's the thing is, like... I'm always astounded when I watch these Hollywood things that why don't people always try to make the very best version of the thing they're trying to make?
Mm-hmm.
And I know that the answer is studio interference and executives saying, well, we need Angelina Jolie to have a fishnet top and short tits. And like, there's probably all kinds of reasons for that, but it still like gobsmacks me how very close this movie flirts with being a good movie that would stand up to the ages and actually... be maybe important to the cultural milieu of its time to like have these conversations about cybercrime and stuff, and they're just like content to be like Fast and the Furious.
Yeah, but I love Fast and the Furious, and I love this movie. Like, this is a classic movie to me.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
like,
that's...
you seeing it as a 40-year-old man is very different than me as a 13-year-old watching this movie. I love this movie.
I still think that Fast and the Furious. Well, it's just so weird because like. I think the first Fast and Furious is a terrible film, and like the second one and the third are even worse. And at
when
some
they start
point,
to lean into the silliness.
Yeah, at some
yeah.
point, at like four, they're like, you know what? Why are we fucking around? Why don't we just make the very best, like balls out, crazy version of this thing?
Mm-hmm.
And like they fast, so like maybe if they had it was a Hackers 4, they'd round it into.
I feel like Hackers 1 hit it. Like yeah, this
really?
Is the ridiculous, crazy, over the top version of hacking.
I needed it to be a little crazier, and I needed to be like. I think of the main crew of Fast and the Furious, and I think of like you know Ludacris and you know Vin Diesel and you know Paul Walker and how they're all very like they're all very charismatic. There's no one that you like. This guy, goddamn, I cannot believe he's on screen. He's useless, right? Like that's literally everyone except for maybe Angelina Jolie and. Crash Override in this movie.
They need, and
also like, you know, Bunk from The Wire is a joke character,
yeah,
and so is the Plague.
Mm-hmm.
Like, none of the villains in Fast and the Furious are jokes. They're serious threats, right?
Hmm.
Like,
I suppose, yeah.
But maybe that's the thing is like, you know, most of the classic Arnold Schwarzenegger badass movies suffer from the same thing. They're villains. You can't take them serious. So maybe this is just a thing where, I don't know.
To me, it has all of the ingredients that make it into a truly ridiculous but enjoyable film.
I want to talk more about Bunk getting pranked because we don't know how many times he got pranked. But when they come back to the final one, which is they faked his death. They made it seem like he was dead on paper. That was worth 1 point.
1 point.
And it brought the score to 60-60.
Tied at 60.
So faking the man's death was worth 1 point. I have to imagine that inviting all of the transvestite escorts to the city to like hit on him.
Oh, you want
to
lick this.
Yeah, that's got to be worth the point. Like, you know, they probably got, well, like, what's the classic prank of, you know, faxing a piece of all black paper that you've taped into a continuous loop so you just waste all their ink. Like,
God.
Is that worth half a point? Like, by my count, they fucked with this man this FBI agent 120 times in the space of a week.
Uh-huh.
Like, what was his life like, and how in the hell did they not get caught?
Yeah. No, it must have been hellacious.
Like, he's got a very good sense of humor when it's about him, but if they fuck with this company, that's when the fire and the fury and the brimstone come out. It's like, man, the scale. Like, did you guys really think when you're keeping score of, like, what this guy's life would be like?
Yeah.
Because I've thought about it, and it's haunting.
It should have been, like, 3-3.
Yeah.
If they were really keeping score.
Yeah. Because that's about what they showed in the montage, too.
Yeah.
So... I think
and
that,
man, they hack from everywhere. Montage, they hack mostly from a phone booth in Chinatown, but they also hack from like the top of a skyscraper, from an antenna up there.
Yeah,
through the GPS or
gotta
through
bounce
the
it off
systems.
Through a Pringles can and off of a radar or off of a DirecTV dish. And
some glamorous hacking right there.
Nothing but bunk. You hit nothing but bunk.
I do love the laptops that are displayed. Like Libby has this crazy, awesome laptop.
It's two inches thick.
Yeah,
it's got 2-inch
not portable.
It's got 2-inch bezels on every side of its fucking LCD, tiny ass 8-inch maybe LCD screen.
Yep,
but that's that,
and it's state of the art. The RISC architecture is going to change everything.
Oh yeah, the P6 processor. Right. But I mean that's legit. Like hot laptops back then were.
Oh yeah, they were.
30 pounds and fat as hell, and they burnt your crotch, and their screens were terrible.
I can't decide if my favorite laptop is the transparent one that the Plague sends to Crash Override.
That looked like a pretty sweet laptop.
That did. Or if it's when Zero Cool spray paints his laptop in like a camouflage color.
Yeah, to the hacking competition.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite laptop of all time?
Probably the one I have now, honestly.
Like, but you don't have a soft spot? Because I remember the first time I actually felt like I could do a full day's work on a laptop. There is this IBM ThinkPad Butterfly, they called it. I don't know what the model name is, but it was like this, you know, it's probably about the size of my Surface now. And when you open it up, the keyboard somehow like shifted mechanically and spread like expanded to like 3 inches over. So you have a full size keyboard into something that's only 10 inches wide. When it's collapsed, and as you would shut the screen, it would retract back into its case. It was so fucking cool.
Yeah, that
like,
is cool.
I love shit like that. That's my. If I could get that computer right now with modern day performance, I probably would. Because like every laptop keyboard I've had, I mean, I've never had like an ultra wide. What do you got? A Mac Pro there?
Mm-hmm.
Every keyboard, every laptop I've had, I've never felt like it's a fully comfortable keyboard.
Huh.
Because it's just like you have to make sacrifices, the size and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I don't have a numpad. I wish I had a numpad.
Boy, you'd be rolling a really, really thick and wide machine if you had a numpad on it. Damn.
Maybe it would flop out when I close my screen.
There you go.
Close it back in.
It's called the catapult.
I got to give it up to Johnny Lee Miller, though. The one line that he can deliver is when he says, shit!
Yeah.
Like twice in the movie.
Yeah.
Once when the Plague crushes his stereo and then...
Yeah, that's so funny. This guy's got his baseball bat and he's trying to be menacing and he just smashes his stereo, you know. Not even a really nice one. It's just like a shitty...
It's like a Walmart, $10 Walmart boombox.
It's not a fucking boombox. No. It's a GFX $15 portable radio. with tape cassette player.
Yep.
Oh man, I'm gonna have to go to Walmart and shout under $15, Plague. Whatever shall I do? All right. Well, I think we have plumbed the depths of the hacker subculture, the hacker movie.
You now know everything about hacking that there is to know.
Yep.
That's worth knowing anyway.
Yep. Hacking's not a crime, and if it is, it's only a crime of curiosity. but thanks, Max, for having us watch this movie. Like, Jim was super excited about it, and I'm like, fuck it. It's probably time for me to watch this movie. I had a really good time watching it. We had a lot of laughs. In retrospect, it would have made it for a killer live watch experience. But speaking of killer live watch experiences, we got one coming up, an experimental thing where a gentleman has requested us watch the John Woo classic Hong Kong action film Hard Boiled. And there's not going to be a podcast. It's just going to be a live watch experience. So look for that when it comes out. That's probably going to be, we've got a couple that we're working on right now.
Hard Boils. There's one for Ghost in the Shell, standalone complex of select animated anime series we're going to be doing. And then, yeah, then we've got a whole bunch of other cool stuff coming up. We're getting slowly caught up. We're getting closer to, you know, announcing what we're going to be doing with the commission queue when it finally reopens and all that. Still not ready to talk about it yet. You still cannot commission a podcast because we still have 12 outstanding ones, and we're trying to get all caught up before we reopen it. But there'll be some news about that real soon. You can get all of our commission podcasts at baldmove.com. I already told you what's coming up. I think we're ready to get out of here. Mm-hmm. Thanks again, Max, for commissioning this movie. Thanks for your support of Bald Move. Until the next time, I'm Aaron.
I'm Jim.
See ya.